you very much. I'm a bit nervous, I have to say, but should we get over that? I'm not sure if any of that would be relevant to what you heard about the Marco Grizzly Bear. I won't be reading anything about Marco the Grizzly Bear. Unless things go down really badly. Anyway, this book of poems came out in my first collection last June, so it's a year already. And there was lots of readings at the time, and now no readings for a long time. So I'm very happy to do this today, tonight. Thank you to Paul and everyone else for inviting me. And to reach so many people who are interested in poetry is wonderful. So we give it a go. Most of my poems are pretty short. I'm not going to be reading any really long poems. That's just the poems that I write. They start off long and they get shorter as I work on them. Not the other way around. I'm just going to start off and read two new poems that aren't in the collection, and then I'm going to read poems from the collection. And I'll just see how it goes, and I'm not going to bore you to death by reading for the next 40 minutes, which maybe 15 or 20 minutes. We'll see how we get on. This is called A New Day.
Can I move this down?
A New Day. One on top of another they come, each pushing the old one aside with a brisk, energetic shrug, bearing no malice towards you as it cloaks itself with the mantle of a new day. As with all the others that have gone before, this day is eager to get going and will not be deflected from its path by your reluctance to let the old one go. The old one was yesterday, shoved unsentimentally aside by this upstart who wills you, even as you linger in a bedroom where death has slid silently in, to embrace its fresh promise, turn your back on its older cousin that you know, as you move away from the window, will shadow all the days of your future. And then this one, slightly different tone, called It Felt Like This. It felt like this, like shit, like a thousand hammers hammering away behind his eyes, like a giant press squeezing in on his head, like the end of the fucking world. Didn't feel remotely like day 14 on the Gaza Strip, or any of the 3,629 days in Guantanamo, and it never once felt like the moment after another car bomb. It felt pathetic now, not at all like the end of the world, closer to self-loathing than any real pain. This was the moment he decided to get better, and that's all it took in the end. Okay, so I read some poems from this collection. I'll start with a poem called Drowning, which was the first poem I got that was published. So the book actually is in, even though it's a thin book, it's in kind of three sections. The first section are kind of personal poems. The middle section reflects my kind of interest or obsession with kind of animal rights over the years. So there's a good few poems on kind of that theme. And then the last section is just a bit of a mishmash. So anyway, Drowning. But I'm not going to read them in that way, I'm just going to read them in a kind of a random way. Drowning. Drowning off a safe beach is not difficult. Atlantic waves, a retreating tide, a sharp belt of a bodyboard, and lifeguards swimming to a false alarm a lifetime away. It's all over in minutes. So it hasn't yet begun for your mother, who is happy you are happy, here on this warm August afternoon. She looks up from her book, smiles expectantly, scans the sand for her only child, sees a gathering commotion at the water's edge, out of the corner of her eye. This poem is called Wild Poppy. Wild poppy. You look like you belong in a gardener's garden, not pushing through cracks in the concrete of an abandoned farmyard, or emerging into lost spaces swept by intercity expresses. Your false fragility is nature's way of saying, don't be fooled by appearances. There is room for whimsicality in my evolutionary narrative. And besides, tenacity may wear a mask. you pioneer those barren places that we have left for dead. Your red flag petals are waving on, an unexpected warning that all is not as it seems, that this is no place to linger. This is a poem called Impulse, which is a bit of an odd poem, but you might recognise the idea behind it. Not the act, maybe, but the actual impulse of the poem. Impulse. There's something not quite right about suddenly wanting to stab your lover. The impulse comes at perverse moments, while Ella sings, a fire glows and candles flicker, and your lover reads beneath the lamp, curled up cosy on the sofa you made love on an hour ago. You would never do it, could never do it. Yet you panic, overwhelmed by a wild desire that comes from nowhere. You know in your silence that nowhere does not exist, that impulses come from somewhere. You stand at the kitchen counter. You have no idea who you are. We're doing all right. Now, we're squabbling now. I told you they were short. We're squabbling now. It's even shorter. We're squabbling now. I act as your trigger, you act as mine. Tiny sparks explode like timeless bombs. We live in remote galaxies, you and yours, me and mine. And there's that coldness you've encountered, so you tell me, and who am I to argue? But I do anyway. I'll trample all those eggshells you place at my feet. My clumsy feet, my fragile shells. Sorry, my clumsy feet, your fragile shell. Now, I don't know where this poem came from, really. It was a time not so long ago, I was on the train a lot. And just came on it, one of the train journeys. It's called Orange. It's one of my longer poems. Orange. Hurtling backwards towards a past or a future. The fields and hedgerows and lonesome houses open up briefly before they fade into themselves. All the night creatures are lying low. Cows flick their ears to a horn blast, warning of an instant that might or might not happen. We rumble past stranded whitethorn and ash, and meadows brushed flat by the wild westerlies that have blown for 6 breathless days and nights. A German couple run out of things to say at the end of a wet fortnight. A teenager sleeps, her soft red curls a cushion on the cool glass that shields her from the storms. Newspapers rustle and sigh. There is laughter at the far end of the carriage. A rank orange poked into the fold-up drinks tray is a shocking orange to the grey day. Although clearly spent, it flashes its essence as if to prove it has plenty of living to do before it relinquishes its identity. Outside, the hedges continue to rush by. Ghost houses gaze glumly at our passing. Swallows swoop and soar, holding their skills in preparation for another unimaginable journey. A cloud of starlings steal the borrowed light, and on an isolated hill above a flooded plain, a lone donkey rails against the injustice of it all. I stare at my reflection in the window, and my pale self stares back, mockingly, as if my reflection is withholding information that I do not wish to hear, at least not now, not this moment, this unplanned for, unexpected moment. Everyday things. I feel I should be talking to you between the poems to break the silence, but I'd rather just read the poems rather than tell you anything about them unless something comes to me as I'm reading them. This is called Everyday Things. The next few poems are from the middle section of the book in relation to my kind of ongoing and long term interest in the way we treat animals, but also just the way we live in the world and the things, people and creatures around us, everyday things. Now that you've told me, that belt I bought in Benalmádena will remain where I've left it, coiled in the chest of drawers upstairs. Now that you've told me, I cannot bring myself to unravel it, thread it through the waist loops, fasten the buckle I knew so well. Now that you've told me, I see complicity everywhere, in bags and belts, wallets and hats, shoes and boots, cruelty in everyday things. Another summer. This reflects part of an obsession of mine, saving little creatures. Another summer. It has been another good summer. I have not mown down any children, old men, or young mothers wheeling the buggies. I have not crushed the skull of a commuter cycling home from work, nor have I obliterated an entire family returning from vacation. There were other fatalities that I should record. On a dull grey day in May, a robin loitered too long on a road that led me home. Others, blackbirds in the main, timed the wheel-height bullet flights with staggering ineptitude. White butterflies zigzagged one last time on lazy afternoons, while moths in their hundreds fluttered blindly from darkness to headlight to a permanent night. In recompense, I became a petty savior, seeking compensation and forgiveness. Snails were moved out of danger zones, spiders gathered before a morning shower, drowning flies rescued and resuscitated. I entertained the notion of selling the car, but somehow knew that such a course of action could only be construed as having gone too far. And this is called Pig Farm, with more hard hitting than direct. And it's from an experience I had of visiting an intensive pig unit a good few years ago, and the shock that that was. Pig Farm. A sow stands short-shackled to a concrete floor decked with shit-smelling, piss-soaked wooden slats. She shifts and struggles, wrenches with sumo neck and unbreakable chain, lurches in slow motion against immovable bars. Her agitation over, she settles back to standing still, slurps at an iron bar for absent minerals, waits for her session on the rape rack, a term the men use with an ugly smile. 10,000 live here, from day-old piglets to sows worn out by never-ending pregnancy. They lie wedged between bars, slumped on their colossal size, while regiments of newborn piglets suckle with clipped teeth. Light stuff, I think. Anyway, 0032 is one of the first poems I wrote, I suppose, on this theme. 0032. Across a ragged fence like wind-blown lace, your silk-soft ears wave bright yellow flags. Tags, sorry. Nice to meet you, 0032. You have a freshness about you, unlike your elders, long settled in their lazy, languid lives. Though your shorn horns and your absent testicles, a trouble treat perhaps for the hungry farm dogs, testify to an early trauma somewhere in these wet bogs. Daft calf with your ridiculous ears, you stand stubbornly against the improbability of human love. Go now to your mother. Go to her, sweet calf, when you still can. So I'm getting toward the end now, so it might have been too. I've got another few poems to read, and then we finish off, I think. Maybe I've read enough on that subject. I think I'll just break from what I've my list. I think I'll read the opening poem of the collection, which I wasn't going to read, called Watching Clouds. Watching Clouds. I'm a long way from Catholic society. Sorry, this, I might just say that I moved out of Dublin about 12 or 13 years ago, having lived in Dublin all my life, and I moved down to not an isolated cottage in the country, but a very rural area, and so that my whole life kind of changed. It's another story, of course, but my whole life changed from that time, and I suppose this poem just reflects that change. Watching clouds. I'm a long way from cafe society, floating somewhere between dream time and the clouds drifting in from the east. I no longer need the tonic of an office to run or a meeting to chair. Nothing from another life that kept me up and running from espresso to espresso. I can cook a damn fine meal, suspend time on an old armchair, and if the phone ever rang, I suspect I could handle the crisis. Mostly though, I am what I am, adrift beneath a frame of stars, lost to the moon's mystery, way up there in the middle of my rooftop window. Once I could take a call with two already holding, went off a few letters at the top of the hat. Now I reflect on the beauty of clouds, make small talk with the spiders. And I'll finish off with three short poems. This one's called Room Service. Room Service. I am more than happy to haul your luggage on and off trains and buses to airports the size of small cities or precious stairs in budget hotels. Be my guest, dear. Pack for 6 days when we're going for two, for a month when we're going for a week. I'm your intimate porter, your transportable lover. Toss me on the bed, unzip and unpack me. Whisper room service in my ear. I work in an organic community, organic garden, and there's about five kind of macho gardeners working with me, and they can all do lots of things on a DIY basis, and I kind of have become known as the person who can't. So this is kind of reflects a little bit. It's called I'm Being a Man. There's a rumour during the rounds that I'm not a man. It's true that men I know can erect a polytunnel in a day, cobble a stove together from spare odds and ends, take a car engine apart, put it back together. Other men I know can wire an entire building, knock up a treehouse between breakfast and lunch, lay a stop-proof fence single-handedly, figure out how the world works by simple observation. I, bereft of manly skills, can do none of these things. I'm not remotely bothered by any of this. I remain cool and calm inside this knowledge, in what you might call an emotion-free zone. I am, it would seem, a man after all. And the last poem is called Winding Down. Reflection on getting older, I suppose. Winding Down. Suddenly, I seem to have got older. I wouldn't mind if I could pinpoint a moment, a date, a period, an event. Then I could say yes, that was it, now it makes sense. But no, nothing like that. Everything moves more slowly now, as if someone pries me open in the middle of the night, removed a battery, perhaps even two, yet couldn't be arsed to tell me. Give it to me straight, whoever you are. Is this how it's going to be from now on? A battery here, a battery there, until my troubled heart gives out. Thank you very much.